Welcome to the DMD edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the Duchenne muscular dystrophy community.
Hello, and welcome to the Rare Care Podcast. This is Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. We're at the 2025 Cure Duchenne Futures Conference in San Antonio, Texas, and our guest is Dr. Ashley Stanley Copeland, a pediatric neurologist at Dell Children's Medical Center in Austin, about an hour north of here. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Larry.
So you have an interesting story of how you came to this particular field. Would you share that with us?
Of course. So from a young age, I knew that I wanted to go into medicine. I thought I wanted to go into orthopedic surgery until I became a teenager and realized how early I would need to get up to be a surgeon. So that was a no-go. Then I decided, I think I want to do something in pediatrics, but I'm not sure what. In my first year of medical school, I determined that I think pediatric neurology is going to be a good fit for me. In retrospect, looking back, so my mom was a special education teacher, and I've always been around children and adults from a very young age with varying disabilities, and my parents always instilled in me and my brother, to treat others, no matter their abilities or disabilities, just as, we wanted ourselves to be treated. It's very easy for me to be around my patients from the personal standpoint. And then in college, I met my now best friend, who actually has another rare disease, spinal muscular atrophy, or SMA, as some of you may know it. I got to be a summer camp counselor for children with various neuromuscular diseases, including Duchenne and Becker muscular dystrophy. So I think that it was just sort of like a natural flow into this patient population that I already had this personal passion for.
So I want to read for a bit from your bio. Dr. Stanley Copeland earned her bachelor's degree in biological sciences with minors in Spanish and chemistry and an additional bachelor's degree in Spanish from Louisiana State University. She earned a master's degree in cell and molecular biology from Tulane and a medical degree from LSU's Health Science Center in New Orleans. She then completed a residency in pediatrics and child neurology at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences, followed by a fellowship in pediatric neuromuscular medicine at the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center. That's quite a resume. So you immediately went into pediatrics after all of this.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. I feel very fortunate. I had some amazing pediatric neurologists in medical school right there from the beginning who helped pave the way and, teaching me how to, get a good history from these patients and how to perform a good neurological exam. A lot of, physician subspecialties these days, the exam, physical exam may not be so important, or maybe some of us think that maybe it's not as important, but in the field of neuromuscular medicine, our physical exam is still very important, even though we have all of this great technology, genetic testing, MRI.
I want to ask you about AI also in a bit.
Yes.
But getting back to the presentation that you gave this morning's panel on therapeutic options, in general terms, how do you view the options out there for boys with Duchenne?
Yeah, so I think looking at sort of, what's our first tier standard of care is steroid treatment. So deciding on, okay, when is the right time for this patient to start it? We have to think about other comorbidities they have, other chronic conditions they may have. We have to think about, unfortunately, sometimes, insurance may dictate which steroid we have to choose in the beginning, even though we may not think that it's necessarily the right one for our patient.
Do you have any doubt that boys with Duchenne must be on steroids?
No, I think for most patients that it is the right thing to do. We have the evidence to back it up. Of course, you know, I'm never going to force a family into a decision that they feel is not, after hearing all of the risk and versus benefits and giving them the information. Ultimately, they're the parents. It is their child or their children. And, you know, I cannot force them to make that decision, even though if professionally and personally, I think that it's the right thing to do. I have to respect their decision.
Right. We've spoken to families, parents who did not want to give their sons steroids. So that's one issue. And then I'd like to talk about gene therapy. But first, in the overall panorama of therapies that are out there today, do you think this is a particularly unusually hopeful time, or is this just a natural progression?
Well, I am optimistically hopeful, hopefully optimistic. So I think hope is a beautiful thing. Of course, think that we have a long ways to go, but I think even after, you know, hearing some of the presentations this morning, that there is reason to be hopefully optimistic with, you know, different types of gene therapy and some of the other drug mechanisms that are in the pipeline.
Well, you mentioned SMA, and of course SMA, we have now Zolgensma.
Mm-hmm.
For Duchenne, we have Elevatus. Those two diseases do have their own gene therapy, but that also brings risk, as we know.
Yes.
And sometimes very serious risk. Can you talk about that?
Yes, it does. And especially, I think, even, you know, it's a very different disease process, but just as we've seen, even with older infants or the younger toddlers getting Zolgensma, I think that, you know, the risk for some of our older adolescent boys or young men, that risk can be higher because they may have those other comorbidities, which can put them at higher risk for an acute hepatitis. And I've, you know, unfortunately I've experienced that in my patient population. I've also had some other children just sail through their intensive weekly, 12-week follow-up stage. But you know, I've had a couple of others who didn't and who required multiple hospitalizations, high dose IV steroids, IVIG infusion, to be able to treat the hepatitis that they had.
So how many patients have you treated with SMA and with Duchenne? Gene therapy?
With gene therapy, this is an estimate, but I want to say it's probably somewhere between 15 to 20 now.
So when it comes to SMA, we do see some dramatic results. Mm-hmm. Babies given Zolgensma within the first couple of weeks of life, or within mm-hmm. the first, 40 days, never seem to actually develop the disease, or at least if they have it, they're not showing the symptoms.
For most of them, there are still some of those two copy babies, so that have the lower number of the backup gene.
Right.
That actually still can be symptomatic. And that's where we get today. Some of our children are having what we call add-on or combination therapy. So we may treat them later on with an SMN2 modifying drug like Spinraza or Evrysdi.
Right.
And then of course, down the road, we're looking at, you know, attacking different parts because what we have right now just looks at the motor neuron, but we know downstream there are effects at the neuromuscular junction and in the muscle itself.
But when it comes to Duchenne, it's a different disease,
right.
And boys are growing all
right.
the time.
Yes, the muscle's growing, and so that makes it that much more challenging for the gene therapy, because in the case of SMA, it's the motor neurons which are not dividing and growing. You get what you get, whereas muscle, that's not the case. And so, yes, it not only that part of it with the growing muscle, but also, of course, everyone knows the size of the dystrophin gene.
It's the largest gene in the body.
Right. So challenging. Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on the potential for redosing at this point?
I think I definitely need to see more data, more evidence. I think it would be awesome if we could figure out a way to safely do it. I think that would be, yeah, my biggest thing is doing it in a way that would be safe. I think, yeah, that's probably would be my
biggest. But we're not there yet.
No, I don't
think. We have a long way to go for that.
I think so.
Right.
And of course, I'm not a basic scientist, and so I don't.
Right.
I do not have a PhD, so I'm very grateful for all the basic scientists and translational MD, PhDs who have done all of this preclinical work and brought it from, bench to bedside. I mean, some amazing people around the world.
I do want to ask you briefly about the budget cuts in Washington and how that affects clinical trials and potentially your work, if at all.
So we thankfully thus far have not had any direct effects, but I'm unsure about, some of my colleagues in other institutions. Of course, there, have been some of the more publicized institutional cuts at Harvard and Cornell, I think, but at my university specifically and at our hospital, I have, at this point, I do not think directly, but it is a huge concern because, rare disease is what I do. All my patients have rare diseases.
I want to ask you specifically the state of Texas. This is the second largest state by population in the country, and you have millions of people who are underinsured.
Mm-hmm.
You have a large Hispanic population
mm-hmm.
and many people who are undocumented.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see many of these people in your clinic, and how can you help them?
I do. So first of all, my partner and I, Dr. Veda and I, the other physicians, the cardiologists, pulmonologists, our physiatrists, our physical therapists, our dietitian, our social workers, we all work to give those patients the best care possible. Our social workers are key to helping with that patient population. So if it's, letters we need to provide to immigration, we do that. If it's trying to figure out a way through the Dell Children's Foundation to get medications paid for, we do that.
Any final thoughts before we wrap up?
Well, once again, thank you for having me. And I feel very honored and privileged to be able to be here at the Futures Conference. And it really is an honor to take care of these boys and young men, and to be able to be a part of their families.
Thank you very much. We've been speaking with Dr. Ashley Stanley Copeland, a pediatric neurologist at Dell Children's Medical Center in Austin, Texas. Thank you. And this is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.